Snake and Culprit. Tell them Crafty is back in the lots, but say nothing of Zhrika. Tell them to mind their hogs. That jowly wizard has a habit of turning them against us. The hogs were the hoofmasters the remaining bastards were tasked with watching. Culprit was with the Cauldron Brotherhood, Polecat with the Shards, because Fetch marked Pulpier and Notch as the most fragile in their support of the war. Shedsnake was at the Wallow with the Tusked Tide, not because Borlip was untrustworthy, so much as his large hoof was vital to their cause. Frequent reports from trusted brethren were a necessity from all three lots. Fetch was right to place eyes and ears among them, the same as she was that Crafty might try to manipulate the other chiefs. As for Marrow, Father, Colquhoun, and Tomb, the chief considered them stalwart. But Oates wondered if she might have to take further steps to safeguard their loyalty now that Crafty was scheming once more. "Go now," the chief told Tarif and Alamra. There was a long silence once they were gone. Oates and his siblings avoided looking at one another. At least he thought so. Hard to be sure, with his gaze directed at the floor.
"You invited him," Fetch said at last, quiet and sharp.
Looking up, Oates found a mixture of pain and anger on her face. Fetch went on, her words clipped and measured.
"Those messages to Eva. You weren't searching for Zhrika. You were looking for him."
"Yes," Oates said. Fetching gave a strangled sound of frustration at his admission and turned away. She scrubbed viciously at her hair.
"Hells, how did I not fucking see it?"
"Why, Oates?" Jackal grabbed a chair, pulled it close, and sat next to him. "Why'd you do it?"
"For Wily, Jacko. Why else?"
"You can't believe he'd actually help."
"Well, there wasn't a damn choice left, was there?"
Fetching turned around.
"You mean other than the fucking Tynes?"
"They ain't helping. I was there too, Fetch. I heard what Warbler said, same as you. The elves can't get a grip on the plague. Said it seemed to have its own mind. A knot that couldn't be undone except by the one that tied it, Crafty."
"What spider you ever seen unravels its own web, Oates?"
"Did you reckon I was going to keep waiting? Let that little boy suffer and do fuck all?"
Jackal put a hand on his shoulder.
"Oates, we..." "No, Jack, no. I ain't going to hear any comforting words. Any more hollow pledges. I've been listening, and what's it done? I let Wily go to the Tynes. Let Warbler go with him in my place. Let you ride off after Crafty. And I waited over a year for the Point Ears to work their hoodoo, for you to come back with the wizard, or at least a way to undo his fucking magic. I waited for nothing. The plague is still in Wily because we didn't face what needed to be done from the start. So that's why, Jack. That's why."
Oates shook his head. He could feel the blood in his body turn to bitter bile. He was filled to bursting with the stuff.
"For all the fucking good it did. Crafty won't move the plague. Only reason he came was to deliver his message about Zhrika."
Fetching gave a rough laugh.
"You think that's why? Hells, you don't know the way he thinks."
"How does he think?" Jackal asked, bristling a bit and unable to hide it.
"Quickly," Fetch answered. "Knowing Oates was looking for him, wanting to talk, that spurred his mind to a gallop. Taking Zhrika? That was born from Oates's message. He was offered an opening and he took it, a way back in."
Oates didn't like what he was hearing.
"You're saying she got took because of me? You left her wandering the Badlands unprotected."
For once, his anger wasn't logs tossed on the fire of Fetch's own. Tightening her lips, she stepped and squatted down in front of him.
"You know Zhrika can protect herself. It frightens me to think that Crafty was able to subdue her, but he wouldn't have taken that risk unless he'd conceived of a way to reap a whole heap of benefit. Why not take someone less dangerous? He could have easily ransomed Culprit or Snake. But Zhrika? That's about getting to you. And you invited him to do it. So yes, Oates, this is because of you. You need to face that so you can get past being furious at me. We gotta decide how we are going to tackle this. We, the three of us. So you want to scream, call me a cunt, go on. But after, I need you thinking clear.
I ain't never called you that, Oates said.
Fetch peered at him. Not even when I couldn't hear? You certain?
I'm certain, Oates grinned. Certain as I knew you were going to smash that table.
Called that too, Jackal said, raising a finger. Were you hoping to fuck tonight? Fetch asked him.
Jackal shrugged. Sure, but Rue hasn't said where yet.
Oates let a genuine laugh come out as Fetch's hand darted forward and flicked Jack in the cods, just enough to make him flinch. Fetching placed her hands on Oates's knees, waited until the awkwardness of their shared stare was banished by a lifetime of affection. We're going to get her back.
I know, Chief.
She studied him, looking for the truth in his response. Satisfied, she squeezed his legs as she stood.
Sorry I didn't get him, brother, Jackal said.
Oates could see he meant it. He reached over and knuckled Jack's leg, accepting the pardon and asking for his own in one touch. Jackal, Fetch said. You got any notion how he did it? Overpowered Jrika?
Jackal ran a thumbnail along the line of his jaw. I never got close enough to ever fight him directly. What we saw him do against the Sludge Man wouldn't have been enough, though. Not against the voice of Bellico. But he has allies. Servants. The Black Womb kept me off him at every turn. Anything that could take Jrika, though? Oates asked.
Some of the djinn they've bound, maybe, Jackal replied. But in earnest? I doubt Crafty needed more than his tongue. This ain't the time for polecat jests, Jack, Fetch said.
Jackal's face was grave. No jest. You think he just talked to her? Oates said. Convinced her to become his prisoner.
It is more his way, Fetch put in. She looked at Oates. If he threatened something she cared about.
Oates blew out a hard breath. Fuck, he was a fool ass. He really did bring this upon them.
But, Jackal went on, with more than a little reluctance, to talk to her, he'd have to get close. No way Hood would have let him, not without a fight.
Fetch and Oates shared a glance, both knowing what Jack was trying to say. The thought of Hoodwink being killed was tough to fathom, but Crafty hadn't mentioned him, avoiding a fact he knew would cause no small amount of wrath.
I ain't counting any bastard fallen until I've seen it, Fetch declared. Especially that bastard.
Damn right, Oates grunted.
Jackal nodded, though there wasn't much fervor in it. Trying to figure out what he'll ask in trade is the same as trying to find his trail. It's folly, but I reckon we should try.
Likely he don't want to trade anything at all, Oates said.
Fetching frowned. You think it's a trap?
He knows what you are, Chief. He made that plain. I won't say he fears you, but I wouldn't discount it either. He made sure to tell me he wouldn't make us stronger by moving the plague. Asked if he should hand us the world in the bargain.
Jackal huffed. Still, why Jrika? Fetch asked. He could lure us with a dozen others.
Well, it's sure as shit us he wants, Oates said. Just before he left, he said, it will be pleasing to see the three of you once again. He's fucking with us, Jackal said. It will be plots wrapped in schemes coated in lies. Same as before.
With just enough truth to keep us off balance, Fetch added, face beginning to smolder once more. Fuck, he may not even have her at all.
We can't trust in that hope, Fetch, and you know it, Jackal said.
She let silence agree.
Oates tugged his beard. So what do we do?
Fetch and Jackal answered in the same moment. She said, before he can speak, we tear him apart. He said, we cut his fucking head off soon as his mouth opens.
He knows you'll try, Oates told them. He's expecting it. And we don't know when he'll show himself again. He just said we'd be together.
They all three looked uneasily at the door. suet-stuffed cunt, Fetch swore. He's already got us squirming.
Jackal stood. Sure way to fix that.
What are you thinking? Fetch asked.
He was here just hours ago, Jackal replied. For all his sorcery, he can't have gone far. Chasing him for a year taught me that much. He's no faster than anyone. Let me go after him. I may finally get my hands on him. Even if I don't, he'll know I'm hounding him. Might make him less bold. At the very least, it keeps us apart so he can't do whatever he intends.
For all we know, he said that just to separate us, Fetch said.
And if not, that leaves Zhrika in his hands longer, Oates added.
Jackal bared his teeth in a silent snarl of frustration.
What then? The door flew open. Alamra crossed the room at a run, arm extended.
Chief, she said, breathless.
Fetch took the small fold of parchment from her and unfurled it, eyes darting across the small script. Her face fell, causing Oates to stand. Chief? He asked. Jackal took a step closer.
It's from Mero, Fetching said, eyes locked on the message. Hispartha landed a fleet at Ur-See. They're marching on Thricehold.
Oates swallowed. How long before they reach it? Not faster than we can fly, Jackal said. Let's go, Fetch. He nearly collided with Tarif in the door jam. Fetch looked up from Mero's note.
Sheikh, your men find something?
The man shook his head. No, my northern outriders have returned with tidings. The room seemed to be holding its breath. Oates certainly was. Tarif delivered the news to Fetching with the bluntness of an experienced warlord. An army is moving through the pass you named the Mother's Whip. My men estimate 3,000 light horse in the vanguard. Half that number of heavy horse follows with infantry of uncertain numbers at the rear. The van will reach us in less than 2 days. Oates felt his heart quicken. The frails were in the lots. And now, so was the war.
Chapter 12. More than a dozen birds took flight from the roof of the keep, bearing messages across the lots. Fetch took to the sky with them, alone. Oates stood beside Jackal and watched the Roke carry their chief east toward Thricehold. She, too, bore a message. It was the answer to Hisparta's invasion, but it was not scrawled on a sliver of paper. It would be written in the frail's blood. Jackal had not liked being left behind. He'd made arguments. The chief gave orders. Oates could see his friend's irritation fading as Fetch shrank from view. By the time she was swallowed by glare and clouds, Jackal's bulging jaw had ground his rancor to dust.
We've a heap to do, he said, turning for the stairs. The climb up had not been easy on Oates, but within the aches there were muscles waking, and his breath returned quicker than it had fled. He kept up with Jackal during the descent, and didn't feel a need to collapse into a chair when they reached the bottom. Still, Thistle was waiting with an expression both admonishing and concerned. Murrow was at her hip, though he was excited at Oates's return from the roof, where the boy was forbidden to go. Oates was grateful there was at least one person in this damn fortress who didn't fret about him being killed by a flight of stairs. As Murrow ran to embrace Oates's leg, Jackal stepped toward Thistle.
Darling, he said, and leaned to greet the woman with a kiss on the cheek. Sorry we rushed by. The chief.
I know.
Thistle cut him off with a gentle clasp on his forearm.
You're forgiven.
Jackal kissed her again and turned to Oates. I'll see to the hogs. Can you gather the others?
I can.
Oates put a hand on Murrow's back and pointed at Jackal.
Do you remember who this is? My friend?
Murrow regarded Jackal for a moment, his twitches growing spirited with concentration.
Jackal!
Thistle snorted a laugh she tried to hold back. Oates didn't bother to suppress his merriment and beamed at Jackal.
That's right. I need you to help him in the stables. Make sure Ugg doesn't gore him. Can you do that?
Yes,
Murrow said, happy with the task. He loved Uggfuck almost as much as he loved Oats. For the hog's part, it was possible he favored the boy over his rider.
Chase me, please, Chackle,
Murrow cried, and bounded out of the keep. Thistle pressed a hand over her mouth and shook with laughter. What am I missing? Jackal asked, as he moved to follow the boy. Chackle is the same word he uses for his cock, Oats was pleased to tell him. Thistle was turning red. Wish he'd have been there the day I became sworn then, Jackal declared, walking briskly backward. That's a much more fitting hoof name. Considering your cod and the boy's are about the same size, I reckon that's true, Oats called after him. Thistle let loose when he was gone, laughing so hard she had to clutch Oats for support.
Oh,
she said when she caught her breath. She wiped out her eyes.
I won't be able to look at him now.
Good, Oats grunted. About time at least one woman can't. Thistle stared at the door to the yard, sobering.
You're leaving, aren't you? Jack's going to the stables because you're both leaving.
Not just us, Oats replied. She looked up at him, eyes wet from laughing, but clouded with sudden worry.
Who else?
Oats cocked his head at the door. Tell you as we walk. Out in the yard, the Castile was queerly calm. The garrison moved along the battlements, their pace measured. That spoke to Tarif's leadership and the discipline of the Zaharcenes. There was no need to run about making frantic preparations for the coming enemy. They'd known this would happen. The men had been ready for months. You're coming with us to Mongrel's Cradle, Oats told Thistle as they passed a group of men pushing a cart full of gunpowder. You and Murrow. Thistle was thoughtful, silent. At last, she nodded, looking a pebble's toss in front of her feet. Too dangerous to stay, Oats went on, feeling a powerful need to fill the silence. Crown's going to want their stronghold back. Past time you two were with the others. With me along to take him, reckon Murrow won't fuss. Hoping he won't, anyway. Hells, he was just spewing the obvious. Jackal weren't happy with it, he said, forcing laughter into his voice. He wanted to go with the chief, help her fight the frails at Thricehold, but she needs him to speak with the Traedrians. Their boats need to do more than haul goods. Fetch needs them to join the fight, destroy Hisparth's fleets, or at least make it tougher for them to land. Anyways, Jack will be with us, so you don't need to worry about nothing. You and Murrow will be safe. She gave him a chastening look for discounting himself. He shrugged, knowing the truth. Thistle placed a hand on his arm and a look of sympathy on her face. She gave no comforting words of denial, no false encouragement. She merely recognized that he didn't feel like his old self, accepted his diminished strength. Rather than anger blossoming from bruised pride, Oats felt only gratitude. Thistle surveyed the battlements as they walked.
Tarif can't hold out forever. Not against what's coming.
Oats grew disturbed.
Thistle had been so vital to the hoof, such a part of them for so long, it was easy to forget that she'd lived in the kingdom. Hisparther was her home in some painful, unspoken-of past.
How long do you reckon? Oats asked. Tarif had promised the chief the Castile would stand at least a year.
Depends on what else the crown brings other than men, Thistle replied.
Her voice was flat. She looked up at Oats, haunted.
What hurt you isn't the worst of it.
The face of the maiden spear entered Oats's mind. His wounds began to throb, stirred by the memory. But it was the recollection that the risen woman's weapon had been able to harm the chief that set his skin to crawling. Oats looked to the sky, wondering what awaited fetching at Thricehold. All the more reason to get you away from here, he told Thistle. She nodded again, but Oats could see the thought of leaving the Zaharcenes to fight Hisparth alone troubled her. It troubled him, too, being earnest. Being more earnest, neither of them would make a difference if they stayed. Tarif had his men, loyal and seasoned, as well as the Castile itself. Strong towers, thick walls, and the guns they hosted would prove enough to hold the crown back until help arrived. That's what Fetch had said. Oates could only believe her. He and Thistle made their way to the large breaking paddock within the yard where the Castile's cavaleros had once drilled and trained. The Zahracenes, fierce horsemen to a man, used it to exercise their own animals now. Today, however, it wasn't occupied by men and horses, but mongrels and hogs. Sluggard was astride Pala in the paddock center, turning the hog in place to shout instructions at Rant and Roar as they ran their own mounts in a pacing circuit.
Roar, sit straight! You're mane-munching again! Rant, stop letting Goria slow! Keep that sow at a good trot!
Oates had seen little of the other mongrels since reaching the Castile. Fetch had sent Cutwolf, Knucklechild, and the rest of his escort either back to the pit or to their respective hoofs. Sluggard had remained to ensure the rescued shipwrights had the skills their new life required. From the looks of it, he'd had difficulty. Rant and Roar both looked uneasy in the saddle. The brother's balance was poor, and the sister was struggling to keep firm control of her hog. Both wore determined expressions, but neither would have made it out of the slops in days gone by, not with years of instruction. But the chief didn't need them to ride into battle, just as far as the Guadalquivir. Oates called out to Sluggard and leaned on the paddock fence. Thistle stood beside him, watching as the three mongrels rode over.
"We out of time?" Sluggard asked as he reined up. It was barely a question.
"We are," Oates replied.
He looked at the mongrel siblings.
"You two ready?"
Roar glowered and nodded.
Rant cocked a thumb at Sluggard.
"Ask him."
"They're ready."
Slug was a good liar. Oates noted there were no stock bows on the new blood's backs, which meant they hadn't even attempted thrummery while mounted. He wondered if they could hit the wide side of an elephant while standing still on their own feet, but decided not to ask. No sense shaming them. They departed the Castile beneath the afternoon sun. Alamra and Tarif bid them farewell at the gatehouse. The sheikh insisted that 20 of his warriors escort them to the river, but Jackal protested. The men sent risked not making it back before the Hispartan vanguard arrived. Tarif's honor and Jackal's good sense waged a small skirmish. They settled on an escort through the first night and clasped wrists. The Zahracenes utilized stallions as well as mares, the first for their heavy cavalry, the second for their lighter-equipped and faster-moving outriders. It was the swifter mounts that went with them, the unarmored men on their backs carrying bows and scimitars. They rode west at an easy pace. Murrow sat in front of Oates, squirming and squealing at the thrill of being astride Ugfuck. Thistle rode double with Sluggard, an arrangement that hindered one of their seasoned fighters, but it was better than putting her with the inexperienced shipwrights. She wasn't strong enough to handle a barbarian, and horses and hogs didn't always make the best company, preventing her from having her own mount. The Zahracenes were careful to ride a stretch removed. Jackal led their tiny hoof atop mean old man. The black hog had languished at the Castile while Jack was off with Fetch on her damn buzzard. He was burning to throw some dust, but Jackal held him back, heeding Oates's plea before they departed that he would stay close.
"What do you think I'm going to do, Oates?" Jackal had asked with a smile as they made the traditional final adjustments to their tack.
"Ride off and abandon you?"
Oates had wrestled with saying anything and quickly regretted it.
"No, I want to be sure, is all."
"Of me?"
Jack was still smiling, but Oates could see the first sprouts of agitation breaking the crust of his good humor.
"Not you. Of them. Murrow and Thistle."
Jackal fastened another full quiver to his saddle.
"That boy will be fine so long as you are close. As for Thistle," Jack leaned over his hog's back and winked.
Reckon she could handle you being a cock's length closer.
I ain't jesting here, Jack.
Neither am I, he replied. He had that bright, brotherly look on his face. The one that could always make Oates smile. Not then.
I need you to do what I can't.
His stern words caused a dispirited ripple to run across Jackal's face. It was there and gone, but Oates caught it. Jackal knew what he was asking and had a choice. He could face the truth, or...
Sure, but even if Fetch wouldn't kill me, Thistle was used to Rounth, so I think your third thrice-blood leg would serve her better.
I ain't playing, you smirking cunt!
His voice burst through the new stables, those Fetch had constructed just for the hogs. Ugfuck startled and shied. Even mean old man squealed in alarm. Thankfully, Murrow was off helping Thistle collect their few possessions. A few stalls away, Sluggard, Roar, and Rant looked up, their own tasks frozen. As Oates fumed, Jackal slowly stepped around the partition between their stalls. Oates was taller than just about everyone he'd ever known, but it was rare he felt so big in front of his friend. His fury made the difference almost dizzying. But as Jack reached to place a hand on his shoulder, fix him with a piercing, caring stare, he was shriveled by shame. They're going to be safe, brother, Jackal told him. I'll see to it. And so will you. You're more recovered than you think.
No, brother. I'm less recovered than you want to believe.
He should have said it. Instead, he'd swallowed and nodded, wanting the confrontation and his harsh words snuffed. Now, with the sun setting, Oates helped Murrow down from the saddle and gathered himself to dismount. They'd only ridden a piece of a day, but it was enough to leave him sore and stiffened. Camp was swiftly made in the ochreous plains near one of the streams stubborn enough to survive this far from its source in the Amphora Mountains. The Zahracenes kept a quarter of their number ahorse and on watch in shifts, forming a protective picket. The remaining men rested at a courteous but noticeable distance, their language as foreign as the smells from their cook fires. Oates sat on the ground, chewing the last of a date. Murrow was at his side, singing tunelessly to himself and drawing in the dust. Across their fire, Jackal rose and ambled over to the Zahracene camp, effortlessly crossing the distance and the invisible divide. He claimed his Urjar wasn't perfect, but Oates never got the sense he struggled to make himself understood among the swaddlehead tribesmen. Hells, at a distance, it was hard to tell him apart from the desert frails, dressed as he was. A little taller, broader, but the strict manners of the Zahracenes toward outsiders relaxed when he was among them. Easy laughter soon followed his arrival. Looking on, Oates couldn't recall the last time he'd seen his friend laugh surrounded by the bastards.
Gold-shitting cat.
Oates looked over Murrow's head at Rant, seated just beyond her already sleeping brother. Her gaze was fixed on Jackal.
Pardon? Oates said.
Rant's knees were drawn up, encircled by her arms. She turned her head and smiled at Oates.
That's what my poppy called men like that one.
She tilted her head Jackal's way.
A gold-shitting cat. Welcome anywhere. At home anywhere.
Sluggard's back was to the Zahracenes. He twisted to look and gave a hum before turning back to the fire.
He walks like he's doing the earth a favor, Roar grumbled without opening his eyes.
Oates glowered, but Rant spoke up before he could tell the sleep-feigning fuck to mind his tongue.
You're just jealous he can have any woman he wants, she needled. Unlike you, uglier than an old sailor's nut basket.
She ain't wrong. Oates put in. On either account.
Roar raised a hand off his stomach long enough to give a dismissive wave. Sluggard, too, appeared done with the subject. He tossed a brad heel into the fire and stood, not looking at anyone as he walked away. Oates felt a pang of guilt. All that talk of Jackal's prowess with women must have been like a kick to the cods for Slug. Cods he didn't fucking have anymore.
and it weren't all he lost. The castration had softened his body, adding a fleshy layer over once hard-etched muscles. To look at him now, none would suspect Sluggard's name had once been a wry jest.
"Oats," Thistle said from behind.
He turned and found her holding a jar the size of his fist. She raised it slightly.
"We should get this done."
He grimaced. "Reckon I can forego?"
"Oh, no,"
Thistle exclaimed, shaking her head.
"Hafsa's instructions were firm. She made Alamra repeat them to me 4 times. Come, no grousing."
Oates spit back a noise that would certainly have been considered a grouse and pulled his shirt over his head, dragging the kerchief off in the doing. He hadn't even worn a brigand, unable to bear the weight of the armored vest against his wounds. Thistle knelt behind him and went to work removing his bandages. When she pulled the stopper from the jar to apply the salve within, Oates bit down on the inside of his mouth. It wasn't the pain of the stuff being applied, though there was some. It was the damn smell. He didn't know what the medicine was made from, but it reeked worse than vinegar. Oates saw Rant try to sneak her nose into her cupped hand. He could hear Thistle continuously clearing her throat, quiet as she tried to be. Roar coughed and turned on his side, facing away. All tried to hide their discomfort for his sake. Almost all.
"Ha! Stink!" Murrow shouted. "Odes, you stink!"
It was Jackal and the Zahrasine's turn to look over as the littler camp erupted with laughter. Oates laughed loudest of all. 4 days after leaving the Castile, their band of 5 hogs reached the banks of the Guadalquivir. Jackal had been careful with their course, making certain they struck the waterway well south of Calbarca. Oates was always amazed at the size of the great river. You could loose a thrum bolt and fail to hit the opposite bank. "Ever been on the water?" Jackal asked Murrow, his smile widening encouragingly as the boy shook his head. "You will today. We'll take the river all the way to the sea. Then we sail east along the coast to Mongrel's Cradle." Roar squinted hard against the sun's glare coming off the river's surface. "Unless these hogs float better than I realize, all that's going to be damn difficult without a ship." "Fetch sent word," Jackal replied, unruffled. "Someone will be waiting for us before the confluence of the Alhundra. We'll ride downstream until we find them." It didn't take long. 14 men in a moored vessel greeted them within a few miles. Roar wasn't impressed. "That's more barge than boat."
"Enough,"
Rant chided as she dismounted, though Oates saw her own critical eyes never left the vessel. Oates knew shit about ships, but this one had a single mast and a broad deck. A ramp at her middle connected ship to shore. A wiry-limbed man with a keg for a belly disembarked to greet them. "You Burgos?" Jackal asked.
"I am," the man answered.
From beneath his salt-stained leather skullcap, Burgos took them all in, sun-narrowed eyes lingering on the hogs. His weathered face was branded on one cheek, a puckered white scar forming an X-shaped island amid coarse gray stubble. Oates reckoned he was well into his 60s. Too old to be pirating as a means of survival, but former prisoners had little choice.
"I'm captain," he said, hooking a thumb at his chest. The gnarled hand swung in the direction of the deck. "That's the Mariposa, and those are my boys aboard. Several of them have had their tongues split, so don't take offense if they neglect to get acquainted."
Boys was generous. Of the 13 crewmen, 9 looked of an age with Burgos, all similarly branded. Of the younger men, only 1 was untouched by the jailer's iron. Their baldricks were weighted with knives, swords, and hatchets.
"Our hold won't fit all them swine," Burgos said, still sizing up the barbarians. "I'd advise we put the more spirited below and them you deem more docile on deck. Still be cramped, but we'll manage."
"Good," Jackal said. "Mean old man will need to go below.
Paula can handle the deck, Sluggard said. He looked at Roar's mount. Blue Snout, too, but I'd suggest Goria be confined.
Oats, Jackal said. What do you reckon for Ugg?
Burgos cocked a dubious eye at Ugfuck and clicked his tongue.
That one will take up most of the hold.
He'll be fine above, Oates said.
Jackal guided all the hogs on board, one at a time. It was a good dose of caution. Never did know how a barbarian would react to such things, and if one decided to get stubborn, better for Jackal to get ripped by a tusk than someone whose flesh didn't knit in the time it takes to have a piss. The crew helped load and secure their saddles and other belongings, the coffin dodgers as deft as the younger men, and they were soon underway. Oates followed Burgos as he led Thistle and Murrow to the canvas canopy at the rear of the ship, beneath which were a few pallets. The crew clearly slept in shifts when necessary, the Mariposa requiring nearly all hands to navigate the river. Burgos dipped a tin cup into a water barrel and drew a drink for woman and child.
Bring you some food in a small while, the captain said. You can rest here until...
Thank you, Thistle said.
The old pirate ducked out from beneath the canvas and began giving orders. Murrow was exhausted, and Thistle bade him lie upon one of the pallets. He didn't fight her, and, with her hand gently rubbing his back, he was soon asleep.
You should sleep too, she whispered at Oates.
He shook his head.
Oates, no one will think less of you.
Oates took a drink from the barrel, downed a second cup, and then a third. The fresh water in the tin, the shade of the canvas, and the motion of the boat were a lulling relief after the long ride. Time was he could have stayed out for weeks and thought nothing of it, but he was damn tired.
What can you do out there? Thistle pressed, lifting her chin toward the deck. You're no sailor. It's a task for Burgos and his men now.
Outside the canvas, Rant and Roar had melded fluidly with the crew's labor. She climbing the mast with a rope in her teeth, he doing some mystery with the sail. Burgos and two of his men were looking on, impressed grins on their faces. Sluggard was finishing a rope paddock for the hogs on deck. Jackal must still have been below. There truly was nothing for Oates to do. He loosed a breath of defeat and eased himself down on the pallet next to Murrow's. Thistle smiled at him. Next instant, Jackal was gently shaking the toe of his boot.
Food, he said.
Beyond him, the sky was purple. No one else was beneath the canvas. Oates sat up.
Shit.
He hadn't meant to sleep so long.
I'm up.
Jackal offered him a hand.
Not yet, you ain't.
Oates accepted the help, and they went out on deck together. Dusk was upon the river, the dark water streaked with harsh blazes beneath a bruised sky. The sail was full, the crew mostly at ease. They took their food standing, watching the crawling shoreline as they cradled their bowls, slowly pushing steaming spoons past their lips. Oates joined the others at the front of the ship, giving Ugfuck a rubdown as he passed. Murrow sat on a large coil of rope, Thistle hovering over him, occasionally helping him take bites. The boy struggled sometimes, and the growing darkness wasn't helping.
You had anything yet?
Oates asked Thistle. She shook her head.
I will when he's done.
I got him.
Oates hunkered next to the boy and took over.
Any good?
Murrow didn't answer. He never spoke during meals. The Castile stablemaster used to beat the boys if they did. Try as Oates might, he couldn't convince Murrow that would no longer happen. Slowly, together, they got to the bottom of the boy's bowl. Thistle took it, passing Oates his portion. He ate so swiftly he could not have said what the stew contained. It was hot. It was cooked. It was worthy of worship. Standing beside him, Jackal silently offered down his half-finished bowl. Oates huffed a laugh. It was an old jest from childhood. Give Idris your supper if you don't want to lose your hand.
Grateful, but no, Oates said. Appetite ain't what it was.
Jackal went back to his far more measured pace of eating, tapping the spoon softly into the center of the bowl between mouthfuls.
Burgo strolled over. Everyone fed?
There were sounds of assent and expressions of gratitude. Oates made sure Murrow thanked the captain as well.
Good, Burgo said. He looked to Jackal. Unless you say otherwise, I've a mind to moor us for the night. We can run her in the dark, but I prefer to court risk only when there's no choice.
Very well, Jackal replied. But it's important we get to the cradle swiftly.
We'll have you at the mouth in 2 days. Take a span longer to reach the sun's port, even if the gut is kind.
Understood.
That warm stew in your bellies is going to pull your eyelids down in a hurry, Burgos declared. You're each welcome to the comfort of the stern. Me and my boys will be just fine on deck, those of us that still sleep. Age tends to keep one restless.
Thistle gave a sigh of relief at the captain's invitation and stood.
Guess I'm not too old yet, then.
Burgos doffed his cap.
No, fair woman. I attest you are far from that.
Thistle smiled at the flattery and gave Oates a questioning look.
Go ahead, he told her. I'll see Murrow to sleep.
I'm with you, Jackal said, falling into step behind Thistle.
Only if you dream about me, Jacko,
she teased as they walked for the canvas tenting together. Burgos chuckled.
Those two might feel they reposed a touch early. Guillermo!
The man called arrived with a bottle.
Roar perked up.
That wine?
Burgos pulled the stopper.
His Spartan to boot.
Roar all but snatched the offered bottle out of the man's hand. Oates could hardly blame him. The Zahrasin shunned wine, and the Castile stores had been distributed between the mongrel hoofs at Fetch's order. A barrel had even reached Oates and Anvil at the pit during the winter.
Like hell's you're drinking it all,
Rant declared, wrestling the upturned bottle away from her brother's lips. She took a barely more moderate swig and gave the bottle to Sluggard. He did not drink. His eyes bored into Burgos. Oates now noticed his stew was also untouched.
Didn't figure the Crown's prisons would foster such generous kindness, Sluggard said to the captain.
Burgos wobbled his head in consideration.
Crown's prison didn't. Mother's knee did. If I'd remembered that upbringing as a younger man, may not have ever been a guest of His Majesty.
Sluggard didn't blink. The old sailor took a step, reached over, and retrieved the spoon from the suspicious mongrel's bowl. He ate a bite. Next, he gently pinched the wine and took a long pull. Placing the bottle back in Sluggard's hand, he gave a nod.
Porridge in the morning won't be poisoned either.
Well, not on purpose. The next morning, the wind was less kind, less generous. The crew took the Mariposa's oars, 6 to a side, and pulled with the current, hastening their progress toward the sea. Rant and Roar took a turn on the benches, sitting opposite each other and casting insults. Soon their bickering competition put them off the rhythm, and their mongrel muscles were sweeping at near twice the pace of the other men, forcing Burgos to relieve them of the duty. At midday, the captain ducked his head beneath the canopy where Oates and Thistle sat while Murrow napped.
Ever seen the city of Sparthus? Burgos whispered.
Oates shook his head, and the man made a coaxing gesture. Thistle and Oates crept away, joining the others astern. The broad waters of the Guadalquivir spread out before them, banishing the notion that Ulwandulis was a barren land. Burgos pointed ahead. Oates knew the once prosperous city of Sparthus was destroyed during the Great Orc Incursion, but the ruins sat upon an island in the middle of the Guadalquivir, far from the bastard's lot, and near impossible to view from the saddle besides. The river provided a far better view. The island drew closer by the instant, dead ahead.
My grandfather used to tell us Sparthus was founded by Herathos Lionclad himself, Burgo said.
Our father said the same, Roar replied,
as Rant nodded wistfully, the wind playing with her hair. Soon they came up on the island and swung starboard, a word one-eyed Ferran, the ship's pilot, had recently made sure Oates knew, for the port fork was blocked by the massive, sundered arches of a collapsed bridge. What was left of Sparthus could be glimpsed through ragged holes in the outer wall. Oates could not make much of the place beyond buildings of white stone, abused by war and neglect, so that now they resembled old, dingy bones. Whatever it had been in its glory, the only virtue left was its size. Burgos leaned on the railing, watching as the pocked wall continued to dominate the view. He grinned at the mongrel shipwrights and wagged a finger between Jackal and Oates.
Likely these lot-born heathens never heard tell of old Lionclad, eh?
Can't say we have, Jackal replied, smiling at Oates.
But I know an old man who wants to tell a story when I hear one.
Thistle wrapped her arms around one of Oates's as the captain cleared his throat and gave Jackal a good-humored shit-eye.
Son of a god was Herathos, he began. A great hero from before even the Imperium. Journeyed here from Alunan, though it was known by another name then before Tyrkania came a-conquering.
Burgos's face scrunched with concentration, soon relaxing with regret.
Gone and forgotten, what it was called. My grandfather knew. Damn.
Lapithia, Sluggard and Thistle offered at the same moment. Burgos snapped his fingers as if the answer had come to him, soliciting laughter from his audience.
Lapithia! Anyways, Herathos came on some great quest, founded this city here, Sparthus, and when he left, he went south to the gut. Now, there was no sea then, just this deep basin filled with a great forest. Who did Herathos meet down there? The elves. So, he tarried a time, likely because he was defiling countless pointier maids. Shit.
His sheepish eyes went wide as they darted between Rant and Thistle.
Pardons. That was rough talk.
Don't shrink from the best details, old man, Rant declared, beaming.
Burgos wrapped his knuckles on the railing.
Stuck his cod in every hole he could get. Gods are lusty as goats.
Even Roar couldn't help but laugh at the amount the captain was enjoying himself.
So, when it comes time for old Lionclad to take his leave, he decides to go south. But the elves warn him there is nothing that way but death. Herathos says he doesn't fear death. Elves say death is like a hungry dog. It will bite the fearful man, but follow the brave one. Of course, the Ruskins, being naked savages living in the wilderness, Herathos damns their warning and goes south, climbs up out of the basin on the other side, and there he discovers...
Dargest, Jackal said, after the expectant pause. Burgos winked.
Reckoned even godless half-breeds would know that part. Yes, land of the orcs. And for the first time, this great hero, this slayer of lions and monsters, this son of a god, faces something stronger than he. Maybe not one orc, maybe not even 10, but the orcs, all of them, that he cannot defeat. So he flees. Back down into the elves' deep wood he goes. And as they warned, death followed him. Herathos, realizing he could not prevent the destruction of the elves' home, smote the side of the basin and cracked the earth, allowing the ocean to flood the great forest. He and the Ruskins climbed out to safety, believing they'd drowned the orcs and created a barrier with the deluge sea that would prevent them from ever invading again.
Burgos lifted his chin at Sparthus.
We know how wrong he was. Took the orcs a few thousand years.
but they got revenge on Herathos.
No. Thistle shook her head. They didn't. The city was just some monument to his vanity. Might as well have been a statue of his cock. You think he cared about this place, if he existed at all? I don't. This wasn't his home.
True, Burgos grunted. He looked at the passing ruin for a long time in silence. But it was mine.
Oates thought of Winsome, now burned and abandoned.
Must hurt, seeing it this way.
The old river pirate stood up from the rail.
Nah, he lied. It's been knocked down for more years now than I lived in it as a free man. Besides, I got to see the fix run out. That was balm enough for me.
Oates and Jackal shared a look. There was a tale they did know, and knew to be true. Hispartha could not dislodge the orcs from Sparthus during the incursion, and gave it up for lost. It was the Claymaster and the half-orc hog riders that would soon become the mongrel hoofs that finally drove them out. Creep and several of the other bastards Oates remembered from childhood had been there, though they never spoke of it. Mostly he begged the story from Beryl, who heard it after Warbler got drunk one night and his tongue loosened. As a slave, the Claymaster had been a sapper, forced by his Spartan nobles to undermine castle walls in their wars against each other. He knew how to bring a fortress down and use that knowledge to crack Sparthus so he and his riders could get to grips with the orcs. That was what Oates had known as a child. Now he knew that the Claymaster not only breached the walls, but rode in with the other 8 plague-bearers to unleash the vile sorcery chained within their bodies. The orcs were huddling behind captured walls to avoid the plague, the only thing they feared. And it came in after them.
Those ash-coloreds did us a great service that day, Burgos said, as they floated by the last of Sparthus.
Oates had never heard that slur uttered with respect, but somehow the captain managed it. As the island and its ruins receded, here and there on both banks the ship began to pass a procession of fallen castles. The broken teeth of watchtowers came next. Soon, the river was hemmed by a cemetery of fortifications. Burgos made a rude sound in his throat.
Hisparta! Tried to protect their precious port.
He waved a hand at the shores.
All this to keep the wealth of Sparthus safe from everyone. Anyone. The Tradrian fleet, the Tyrconian fleet, pirates from Kerniolis. They even feared raiders from Calmaris would come back in their longships to pillage, as they'd done hundreds of years before. And what happened?
This time it was Jackal and Oates who answered in unison. The orcs. This time there was no laughter.
The orcs, Burgos exclaimed. On foot. Perhaps if the crown had built all this at the gut, eh? We would have been spared the incursion.
The defenses ended with 2 great towers standing sentry on opposite banks of the river. As the Mariposa passed beneath them, all the elder crewmen stood away from their oars. Burgos and the old men scowled at the tower on the east bank. Almost as one, they spat. Only when the boat had drifted beyond did they take up rowing once more. Burgos shifted uneasily.
Might seem a touch churlish to you, that display. But we swore we'd never labor beneath that damned place again. And we meant it.
The old sailor cast a hand over his shoulder, dismissing the towers without giving them a backward glance.
That was their greatest defense. A chain that could be raised across the river, block passage to the port. Towers to protect the winches, prisoners to work the winches. No warring fleets ever came up river, but we raised that chain 4 times a day all the same, to ensure we were fast enough if the time ever came to do it in earnest.
He gave a bitter, wet chuckle and shook his head.
Our prison became our sanctuary when the fix came. The city fell, but not us. We held that tower.
for months. The lower levels leaked, so we had water, but the things we ate. Still, we wouldn't have made it if the Claymaster hadn't come. Never did repay him, so now I get my chance with the next great mongrel warlord. Your fetching is going to finish what was started and free Ulwandulas from the crown. May not live to see it, but I'll die to aid it.
Oates felt Thistle's grip tighten around his arm. In that squeeze, he felt her hope that it wouldn't come to that, and her knowledge that, for many, it would. Perhaps that was simply what lay eating at his own heart. Roar leaned forward sharply, putting a hand to his brow as he looked far downstream.
You may get your chance, old man. Today.
Everyone followed his gaze. Sluggard cursed. Oates couldn't make out much. He didn't have Fetching's vision, or even Roar's, apparently. Squinting hard, he could just make out another, larger ship on the river. No, three ships. Or five?
Lionclad's balls, Burgo swore. Tell me those aren't.
A Draman and six war galleys, Rant said with grim certainty. It's a Hisparthan fleet.
Chapter 13. Burgos left the prow to give orders, swift yet calm. The Mariposa began to turn, quick at the first and then sluggish as it cut across the wind. Holding to the side with one hand, Oates placed his other on Thistle's back, straining to aid their balance. He heard the mast creak, the snapping voice of the sail, but kept his eyes on the Hisparthan fleet for as long as he was able. Soon enough, the Mariposa came around and began to crawl upstream. The old river pirates bent to the oars.
Is there even a chance we can outrun them? Sluggard asked.
Roar made an ugly noise in his throat. Rant was more elaborate.
The Draman, maybe, but not the galleys. Not for long.
They may not give chase, Jackal said.
His voice was steady, but Oates could see him tensing with the growing danger. It wasn't fear, but excitement.
One little boat. Why bother?
Because we ran.
Thistle's numb reply drew the gazes of the half-orcs. The woman's eyes lifted and fixed on the stern shelter, where Murrow stood peeking out, roused and confused by the lurching vessel. Slipping free of Oates's touch, she made her way toward the boy. Oates let her go, wanting to follow, but not enough, it seemed.
So we pull them damn oars, he said, gesturing at his fellow mongrels. Us. Let these old frails tend the sails and jibs and shit.
This ship doesn't have a jib, Roar told him.
You know my fucking meaning. Not a frail alive that can match a half-orc at such labor, even if they was young.
Those galleys will have 24 oars per side, Roar said, with 2 men per bench, and they may not even be men.
Oates didn't like the sound of that.
The hells does that mean?
He means Hisparta loves to use half-orcs as galley slaves, Sluggard said. Was almost one myself before the Carnivales.
You were fortunate then, Rant told him.
They shared a look, and Sluggard replied with a weighted nod. Oates felt his jaw clamp down. He could no longer make out the ships. He hoped it was because they had chosen not to pursue and not because his eyes were shit.
If we can't outrun them on the river, we surely can on land. He turned to Jackal. Let's get to the shore, straddle our damn razors, and get gone.
Jackal's face went slack. Oates, we can't just flee and allow them to come unchallenged.
Hell's overburdened, Jack. It's 7 fucking ships, and that's what we saw. Could be twice that many.
Could be half, and you'd still be insane, Rant said, gawking at Jackal as if his mind were already beyond saving.
7 ships? 12? What does it matter?
Jackal pointed upriver.
However many, they are coming to resupply and reinforce Kalbarka. They do, and our chances of retaking it are dust. Our wreckers are watching for ships from the north. There is nothing to prevent this fleet from sailing right to the city's port. Just us.
Jackal got that look, the one Oates had known his entire life, the one that said he was about to do something brave and fool-ass. Before Oates or anyone could wrangle him, Jackal darted off, calling for the captain.
"Here we fucking go," Oates grumbled, shaking his head as he followed.
"The river chain," Jack was saying as he caught up. "How many men would it take to raise?"
Burgos shook his head before all the words were out of the mongrel's mouth.
"Can't be done. Even if we were willing to go back in that damn tower, which we aren't. Too damn old and not enough of us. And you'd need 20 more men in the tower on the other shore. Besides, the gears have sat untended for over 30 years. The workings will be rotten. No, lad. That chain will stay abed in the muck at the bottom of the river."
Jackal accepted that with a nod and clenched teeth. His eyes glazed, his jaw bulged, his mind searching for another way. Oates grabbed his arm, yanked him away from whatever scheme was beginning to seduce his thoughts.
"We need to make land."
"He's right," Burgos said. "They'll be on us by the time you're unloaded, but..."
"What?" Jackal demanded. "We put heel to hog and leave you to them? You want a second brand on your face, old man?"
"Crown don't give a second. Branded outlaws are put to death."
The grizzled captain's eyes twinkled.
"And we wouldn't have another fate."
Oates hated the notion of these men dying for them, but he knew in his guts it would be folly to suggest they abandon their ship and run. The deck was their saddle, the boat their hog.
Rant's shouting voice snatched their attentions. "One galley pulling ahead! They're giving chase!"
"Whatever you reckon to do, best do it fast," Burgos said, chin and eyes lifting toward the prow.
Ahead, Sparthus and its island loomed out of the water, an axe blade of earth and stone cleaving the river in two. Both passages appeared clear, but Oates knew from their trip downriver that the right fork was blocked at the north end. The left contained no such impediment, but if they took it and disembarked, they'd find themselves on the western side of the river. The wrong side. There was no crossing the Guadalquivir this close to the delta. Riding south would only bring them into the sucking embrace of the old maiden marsh. They'd be forced to turn back, ride north until they could ford the river. If they could ford the river. The frails would likely have all the crossings watched by then. The fleet behind them was bringing enough men for the job. Even if they could avoid being caught, it'd be weeks in the saddle before they'd reach the sun's lot. Jackal clapped a hand on Burgos's shoulder and pointed toward the right fork.
"Will his Spartan know about the fallen bridge?"
"Likely," the captain replied. "Unless the man in command is some blue blood given a ship by the queen just because of who his padre was. Wouldn't want to wager he's an ignorant, regardless."
"Take us in," Jackal decided, without pause. "Take us right."
Burgos didn't balk. He hollered the orders to his crew, and the pilot angled the steering oar. The Mariposa swung for the eastern channel. Oates didn't find the same ready acceptance of Jack's decision, but Roar beat him to the challenge.
"You are fucking moon-brained!" the big frailing exclaimed, stomping across the deck to yell full in Jackal's face. "Taking us in where we can't escape? You'll get us all killed!"
Jackal's calm outmatched Roar's fury. "You know we can't outrun them. Either way we go, we're caught. This forces them to make the same hard choice. If they know this side is impassable, they won't bring the whole fleet. Might not even risk one ship."
"And if they don't know?" Roar demanded. "If they all follow? You'll have led us into a very shit position."
Jackal grinned, the folds of his headscarf flattened to one side of his face by the wind. "We'll have led that entire frail fleet into a very shit position, too." Oates watched his friend's bald confidence soften Roar's scowl. It was a reaction he knew well. Truth was, Jackal possessed a bit of sorcery long before he was given a god's blessing. There was a reason Oates had gone along with his daring hog shit since childhood. They came up on the island's southern tip. The river shrank as they slipped into the eastern channel, yet remained wide enough for a further four vessels their size to sail comfortably abreast. Still,
Oates could see Burgos and the crew grow wary, the spills of jagged rubble upon both banks thickening with each stroke of the oars. Without being bidden, Rant climbed the mast, fast and fluid and barefooted. She held one-handed to the top and hung out, looking behind. There was a long moment. Even the wind seemed to hold its breath. Rant looked down at the deck, pitched her voice so they could hear, but refrained from shouting.
They're coming.
How many? Burgos asked.
Two.
Oates glared at Jackal, but found not even a ripple of doubt. He was looking intently ahead, scanning the ruins. To their left, the shadow of Sparthus darkened the water. Oates was more focused on the opposite shore, where there remained likely spots to moor and make landfall. It wasn't too late. Not yet. Was he craven? Wanting to run? Was that what the maiden spear had done to him? If so, it was a worse wound than the skewering. But Oates saw he wasn't the only one with an eye for the right bank. Sluggard's gaze kept darting twixt there and Jackal, hoping he would change their course, growing more agitated with each moment he did not.
They're beginning to gain!
Rand's report shredded Sluggard's patience. He stepped to Oates, stood beside him, but turned about so he did not face Jackal.
You can stop this, he hissed.
Oates stared at him.
Me?
Give the order to make land.
I'm not in command?
Sluggard's eyes blazed as he leaned closer.
Oates, you're the chief's right hand. Jackal's just her hard
slug, Oates said, quiet and firm. Don't.
Sluggard took a breath, his face cooling, but only enough not to heat Oates's own temper.
The only one on this boat that sees him as above you is you.
Jack knows what he's doing, Oates said. It wasn't much of an answer.
Why? Because he can take on an entire fleet alone? He's not alone, though, Oates. We need off this boat.
Sluggard stepped fully in front of him, blocking his view of Jackal.
Thistle and Murrow need off this boat.
A tether Oates hadn't known was there snapped. He bowled past Sluggard and reached the prow in four strides.
Jacko, this ain't right. We need to...
There!
Jackal said, pointing ahead with a fierce joy.
Thought there was another.
The corpse of a bridge stood before them. Unlike its tumbled twin upriver, this one still partially spanned the river. Once supported by three great arches, only those in the center and on the eastern bank were intact. A gap of sky shone bright between Sparthus and the bridge's ravaged left end.
Well, fuck me if I hadn't entered my dotage unawares, Burgos said, hurrying over. I'd forgotten she still stood. Hello there, Isabet, my lass.
Oates cocked an eye at the captain.
Isabet? Named for the high-born lady that leapt from her, Burgos replied,
eyes not leaving the bridge.
Imperium likely had another name for her, but she's been Isabet since before my father's time.
A good sign, Jackal said, giving Oates a wink. He pointed at the center arch, wider and larger than its surviving, flanking fellow. Can we make it through?
Weren't meant to, Burgos said. Vessels were supposed to use the western channel.
Jackal smirked. But can we?